Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes and I've got a new podcast, the NFL Road Show. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blue Wire.
The Detroit Pistons select Sekou Doumbouya.
The boy gets run off the line. Down the lane. My goodness.
Look at that. Pistons come right back at him with a bruise. Jam. Dishes to Luke for the long gun. It goes.
Hello, everyone. This is Pistons versus Everybody, the Detroit Pistons podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson, and joining me tonight is Pistons Twitter godfather, site expert for Hoops Habit, friend of the show, Duncan Smith. How are you doing, Duncan?
I'm not doing too bad, Laz. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm less emotionally drained than I normally am after a loss. I don't know how that feels.
Well, I think acceptance is an important part of a rebuilding process. I think that it preserves your mental energy and your general sanity a lot longer than riding and dying for a team that's going to lose a lot of games.
No, you're absolutely right. My stepfather calls me during games to complain about the team. And he called today near the end of the fourth quarter, just completely frustrated. And it's like, I told him, you're not built to lose 60 games. And you'll lose 60 games, man. I don't know what to tell you.
He's going to need another winter hobby or something. This is going to be rough on him.
So the Pistons, they lost their first regular season game 111 to 101. Hey, they cracked 100 points. We didn't know if that was going to happen. It only took one game. The offense kind of came apart in the fourth quarter, though. Are you surprised they didn't run more stuff through Blake Griffin down the stretch?
Kind of, especially considering how much he was on the floor. And I think that other things that they tried, other than, you know, just getting a lot of fast breaks, you know, I think the half court offense was not especially effective. So it does kind of surprise me that they didn't run a whole lot through Blake, but, you know, maybe they're trying to preserve him a bit. They don't want to burn him out, you know, the first game of the season. It surprised me a bit, though.
Yeah, playing 35 minutes does not seem conducive to not burning him out. But at the same time, I guess if he's playing at half speed, it doesn't matter how many minutes he plays.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment. You know, he played 35 minutes, but he only took 13 shots. He also only had two assists, I believe. So it's not as though he was being overused on offense, that's for sure.
I know you, like everybody else, were concerned about the offense coming into the season, with good reason, I might add. What do you think is something that's going to happen more often for this team? Are they going to go 8 for 35 from three more often? Or are they only going to shoot 8 free throws on the night more often?
Yeah, I feel like neither of those are likely to happen a whole lot. A big reason that they shot so poorly from three is Svi went 1 for 8, and that's not going to happen all that often, I don't think. And then among your starters, Blake and Jeremy Grant went 1 for 10. So, I mean, that's 2 for 18 from your three highest volume 3-point shooters, most likely this season. So that's probably not going to be replicated again too often. And only getting 8 free throws is pretty low because this is a fairly physical team. So I would say that's a pretty surprising number.
Yeah, I was obviously surprised to see Svi go 1 for 8, especially since, like, considering the quality of a lot of his looks. He had some pretty good looks, especially in the first half. But I'm more shocked that they were able to get off 35 like relatively clean 3-point attempts. And I think you're right that if that continues, we'll see better nights from the offense and the team will score more points. But, you know, there isn't a lot of shooting on this team. And so I kind of wonder like what how often they're going to be able to generate those good looks.
Yeah, it's funny because there's a decent number of pretty good creators on this team. Mason Plumlee in particular has surprised me. I have no idea how many times I've done that in podcasts and stuff like that. If you've caught me in the past, apologies. Obviously Blake is a known commodity as far as passing goes. Plumlee has been, for me, a nice surprise. So you've got your creators, you've got your guys who can pass the ball. You just don't have a whole lot of guys that can finish it, especially from 3-point range, as we saw tonight.
Yeah, 29 assists on 45 shots, or in 45 made baskets, I should say. That's not a terrible ratio, all things considered. Especially when you think about how that number would be higher if they had made more shots. You brought up Plumlee. I mean, like I knew he could pass a little bit because I talked with TJ McBride a couple weeks ago about the acquisition, and he said that was like one thing to really look out for. And you can obviously like look at his basketball reference page and like see his assist rate and be like, oh, like that's pretty high for a big man. But I didn't realize it was going to be quite that level of playmaking out of a center that was widely derided at the time of his signing.
Yeah, I'm not ready to retract anything just yet, but
totally fair.
Yeah, that's partially stubbornness. I didn't retract anything on KCP until he won a championship, so I'm stubborn as hell. I'm gonna stick with my guns for a little while, but I will say that I have been pleasantly surprised by basically everything I've seen out of Mason Plumlee, other than like a couple of first game fumble passes in the preseason. Other than that, like I have really nothing but fairly good things to say about Plumlee. He has been a pretty reasonable surprise.
No, agreed. I mean,
and I want to say too, I listened to that podcast with TJ and I assumed there was like some home cooking in there, and I kind of discounted a lot of that. Obviously, my respect for TJ is like through the roof, but I was like, we'll see. I don't know. And I may be willing to stand corrected sometime in the next couple months.
That's totally fair, because I think about, all the times I've spoken about Luke Kennard on other podcasts, and, we're going to get to Luke actually. But there's always a tendency by people who watch the team to overrate their own guys, or to just, see what their own guys do in a better light than, the other 29 teams in the league. But like, this is a consistent trend with Plumlee, right? Like he's been a good passer for the bulk of his NBA career. And so this looks real. How often guys will actually like finish his shots or finish shots that he creates for them. Like, we'll see. And I don't know how much, like five flat, like backdoor cut type of stuff they're going to run. I don't know if we're going to get point Plumlee, much like we got point Dre a couple of years back, but it's a good tool in the toolkit. Absolutely. What do you think of Killian Hayes in his debut? 7 points, 3 assists, 4 turnovers. Seemed like people were mad he didn't play down the stretch, but he kind of turned the ball over on 3 consecutive possessions, and it's understandable why he wouldn't play down the stretch after that. But before he imploded in the fourth quarter, what'd you think of Killian Hayes?
Yeah, I thought that up until that point, it was he had a sort of a quiet debut up until like everything just came crashing down around him late. Looking at his stat sheet here, he had 6 shot attempts, 3 assists, 4 turnovers, kind of like typical output, I'd say, for a rookie point guard who is going to be fairly low usage, I think, for a while anyway, in his debut. I'd say it was a quiet game for him until like the wheels fell off. That's probably the best way I'd characterize it for him.
Yeah. What makes you think he'll be low usage to start? Just like he's not going to initiate a lot of plays, or that they have so many other play finishers on the floor in the starting lineup that what he contributes is not going to show up, statistically?
I think probably more the latter. I think that especially as the season goes on, assuming Blake is healthy. I think a lot's going to run through him. I think that Jeremy Grant is going to probably have a nice little boost in usage per the promises accorded to him in his recently signed contract. Killian's lack of experience, obviously, I think is going to make him less than like the constant primary initiator of everything. So I think he's it just seems to me as though he's probably going to get eased into things. Like as the season goes on, that usage will certainly go up. But I wouldn't be too surprised if we see a fairly low number for him the first, say, month, maybe 2 months of the season.
Yeah. I didn't realize he only played 21 minutes. You know, I'm looking at the box score now for the first time since I like actually looked at the box score. And that does seem really low. That's obviously very low for a starting level for a guy who starts. I wonder if there's just longer stretches than I imagined in the third quarter when he didn't play. Because, you know, Rose didn't play 30 minutes, right? He only played 27 minutes. And that's about where they were. That's about like the cap they were putting on Derrick Rose at the beginning of last season. And so, like, I fully expected them to come out with that kind of soft, you know, 27, 28, 29 minute cap on Rose. And we saw that again tonight. And it's not like DeLon Wright, the other point guard on the roster, also played a bunch. He only played 19 minutes. And so, the balance there, I think, is pretty interesting.
I wonder if the plan is to more or less stagger Killian and Derek, because like obviously their numbers, I don't remember for sure if they never shared the floor, but like obviously their numbers match up to like an exact 48 minutes. So I wonder if that's kind of the plan, at least in these early days, like get Derek his 26, 27 minutes, fulfill that minutes limit, and then Killian gets the rest.
If I remember, they played together in the final preseason game for like an extended stretch, and like that didn't look amazing because both of those guys need the ball in their hands.
Yeah, it's just not going to work. Like I understand that Casey wants to try it and he loves his like 2-point guards and 3-guard lineups and everything, but I just don't know if it's these guys.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, other guy we should probably talk about, Josh Jackson, played 29 minutes, was 8 for 14, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, just kind of everywhere, making plays on both ends of the floor. Continues the revelation that he started in preseason. At what point are we gonna like more heavily emphasize what Josh Jackson is bringing to this team? I mean, he played down the stretch. So,
I think it's definitely time that we recognize him as a pretty major contributor for this team. You know, he led the team in scoring. He was close to the top in minutes. He led him in field goal attempts, had a bunch of rebounds relative to, you know, his position. And he did some of everything, as you mentioned, you know, like he was all over the place. I really think that on a game by game basis, it's going to be hard to see him not have an increasing role on this team, because he's just been playing too well to keep him off the floor.
Yeah, if you had told me Josh Jackson led this team in shots, I would have told you they lost by much more than 10 points. But
yeah.
Everything kind of came in the flow, right? And you know, a bunch of these shots he made, you know, he went 3 for 7 from three. He only took one like horrendous three to my recollection. And it seemed like he did the rest of his damage in transition. This Pistons team got up and down in transition a lot more than any Pistons team I can ever remember. How excited are you to see that element of the team finally be in play?
I think it's great. It's a lot more fun to watch a team that can run than that can't. You know, we've seen plenty of that in the past with Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond teams. You know, every time Reggie would walk the ball up, I'd be watching that 24-second clock to make sure that he got it across before the 16-second mark. You know, like just like the slow pace and stagnant, the stagnant pace as well is just a whole lot less fun to watch than a team that's going to be opportunistic and push the ball down the floor. And I think we saw tonight that if they're going to score points, which, you know, they barely did again, they're going to need a lot of fast break points. They scored 23 points. That's a pretty significant number of points when you only scored 101 on the game. So, yeah, I'm really excited that they're going to be a running team, at least as so far as like their opponents will allow it, because the Timberwolves are not an especially good team, you know.
Very true.
They pulled out the win at home, but it took them probably more effort than most teams are going to have to exert on this Pistons team to get wins. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to run as much as they were able to tonight against a lot of teams, but the fact that they are looking to be opportunistic is really encouraging. Not so much from a competitive standpoint, but like it's going to make it more easy to watch. It's going to pump up some numbers, and that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the entertainment product that they put on the floor is going to be better even as the losses continue to come. You said they had 23 points in transition.
According to my my ESPN Chrome extension here, okay, which has some extra real time stats, which usually end up being accurate post game, as far as I know. So right. Yeah, that's what I have here: 23 points, 23 fast break points.
All right, so 23 fast break points, 24 points from behind the arc, only 3 points from the free throw line. That's a pretty big proportion of points to come from transition and threes out of like the total. That's pretty interesting. That's something I'll probably like keep track of as the season goes to see like what their transition numbers end up being, because again, like it's just something we haven't really seen from this team before. You know, speaking of guys who got out in transition, Sekou Doumbouya had, what did he end up with? He ended up with 9 boards, which is crazy to me. He's just been so active on the glass. He's one of the guys you gave an A for their preseason. What are your expectations for him, like for the season as a whole? Does it look a lot like what tonight looked like?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say like his minutes total was low, but I think maybe some of that came from like ripple effect from Jackson getting so many minutes. He only got 14 minutes, which it just seemed like he was out on the floor more. You know, like it seemed as though his impact was greater than just a 14 minute stretch or multiple stints equaling 14 minutes. You know, so he does kind of remain like the biggest question mark as to like how much we can expect to see him, because like there is such a positional logjam everywhere that he could be expected to get minutes. But like every time we've seen him on the floor since the beginning of the preseason, he's really stood out. You know, I'd say it's pretty clear that he's gotten a lot stronger since we last saw him. His level of awareness is much higher. He's in the right place just so much more than we last saw him. We aren't seeing him just kind of like disappear into like the corner and into the mist for like entire stints on the floor. You know, like there's no 4-on-5 on either end when he's on the floor anymore. And that was a big thing for him last year, other than like that the 3 or 4 really good games that we got out of him. Seeing just how the minutes are going to come his way is going to be interesting, but like every time he's out on the floor now, the question now is like, what is he going to do, rather than like, is he going to screw this up? What kind of mistakes are we going to expect? And now, like, obviously he's very young. He's younger than most rookies still. There's going to be mistakes, but, I guess he just turned 20, so he's not younger than most rookies. He's younger than some rookies still. We're still going to see mistakes, but they're becoming less, and they're getting outweighed by the valuable things he's able to do on the floor now, I think.
Yeah, and you see him more easily make up for mistakes. I'm remembering like he had a really bad – he went for a really bad pump fake on a Hernan Gomez shot, and then Hernan Gomez like blew the layup Sekou like immediately grabbed the rebound and got out and like went in transition, and good things happened from that. And I think you'll see that continue as he gets more minutes. But, you know, I would buy that he only played 14 minutes because him and Blake only shared the court for a tiny amount of time at the end of the second quarter. And Blake played the entire third quarter, which I was very surprised by. And so I think, yeah, that's like from a effectiveness standpoint, like you can probably point to that and say like that might be why Blake was less effective in the second half. But yeah, like with as well as Sekou was playing in the first half, I was a little surprised that he didn't get more time in the third quarter. And that is where I expect like more of his minutes to come in the future, like in that shift, like with a full bench lineup.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm curious as to why Blake was stretched out so much in the third. I didn't realize that was where the bulk of these 35 minutes came from. You know, it seems as though like getting him off the floor for 4 minutes in the third and Sekou for 4 minutes in the third would not be an impossibility, especially because like the third quarter was, I mean, they won it by 4 points. It's not as though it was like some sort of great stretch for them.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's confusing as to just why that is.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on every possible chance to win this season. Because Lord knows, if you're a Lions fan, there are not going to be that many opportunities for you to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. You go to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, say that three times fast, so that you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your draw criteria, so you can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move just as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. That's their best offer available anywhere. You go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
You predicted that the Pistons would finish 15th in the East. That's last. That's bad. What are your major concerns with this team?
I think that they've got a lot of youth that they are reliant upon. You know, like Killian's kind of blow up in the second half, I think is probably something we'll see now and then, simply because he's so young and you know, the NBA is a whole different game from what he's accustomed to. I think that some of the depth elements on this team are also questionable. You know, Jahlil Okafor had, you know, looking at his stats it doesn't look that bad. You know, he had 8 points, yeah, 4 of 7 shooting, 7 boards, 2 turnovers, 15 minutes. But like at the same time, it just seemed like every time he was involved in a play, it was a disaster on either end. I think that is probably somewhat unfair. It's more impression of probably a few really rough stretches that kind of overwhelmed the whole picture. You know, shy of like watching it through a second time. So I have some concerns about the depth there. And, you know, Blake Griffin is still the best player on this team. And how many teams is that really true of in 2020? You know, if you don't have the best player or one of the two best players on the floor, you're not going to win too many games in the NBA. And I simply think that, like, the top end for this team is not what you need in order to be competitive. And the depth on this team is also not really what you need in order to be competitive.
No, I mean, those are all justified. You know, speaking to Jahlil Okafor specifically as an element of that, you know, subpar depth, I thought it was just like endlessly fascinating that they were having Jahlil Okafor like show at 28 feet. And I was more fascinated that it was working for some reason. And then I remembered that, and then I like noticed that it's because like they're forcing like Naz Reid of all people to like make decisions in the middle of the floor for the Timberwolves. It's like, okay, like that is like one of those, like that's a process you do want to engineer, but like, do you want to do that by like blitzing Jahlil Okafor? Like, I don't think so, but it worked. So it's like one of those bad process, good results things. It's like, I hope that doesn't continue, but I also like don't really know like how to maximize what Jahlil Okafor like has to offer defensively. So it's like, it's weird. And right, there are a lot of elements like that on this team.
Yeah. I feel like maybe Casey is just trying a whole lot of things, you know, like their preseason was abbreviated. Their training camp was abbreviated. I don't think that Casey is under any illusions that he's coaching for a playoff run or anything like that. So yeah, he can, you know, treat the beginning stages of the regular season as an extended preseason tryout, not just tryout for like players and roster spots, because that's already decided, but like trying out different tactics, different things, and like figuring out like how the heck can you use Jahlil Okafor on the floor on defense. You know, like maybe that is his optimal move in some matchups. So I'd say we're probably in that that extended feeling out stage that we're going to see all over the NBA in this ridiculous, quick and also long turnaround that we've got on our hands.
Yeah. Were you surprised that, and not surprise is the wrong word. How much do you think of an impact it's going to have, the compressed timeline, around training camp, around the end of last season for certain teams and the beginning of the season for other teams?
It's so hard to say. I think I've heard theories both ways. You know, I've heard theories that like teams that went on deep runs are going to be even better off than teams that have been off for so long. You know, like they did have basically like a full off season and then some between the beginning of the hiatus. Well, roughly an off season between the beginning of the hiatus and the return to the bubble. So, you know, then they got some additional time off, and maybe some of that additional, they don't have as much rust to shake off. You know, they'll be able to get back into a rhythm and into a groove, and it'll be a little easier because they won't have to deal with like all the rigors of the bubble. They can live whatever semblance of a normal life you can live in a pandemic. At least they can do it at home, you know,
or at a club supporting your best friend's business,
or at a club, you know, she's a boss now. So I think it's fine. So I think there's an argument to be made about that. And then you've got the teams that had the longest layoff. They're also the worst teams. So it's going to be really hard because isn't really going to be like a real test case, because, you know, the bad teams got a long layoff. They're going to be bad and rusty. The good teams, they didn't get a layoff. They're going to be good and less rusty, maybe a little more tired, but, you know, so be it. You give LeBron like every sixth game off or something like that. So it's going to be hard to see exactly how that's going to play out. But it's going to make for some really fascinating, like, mid and later stages of the season scenarios. Even, you know, God willing, no COVID issues arise or whatever, things like that. Just how teams choose to manage their rotations and things like that. Because there's going to have to be some sort of additional rest factored in as teams go on, I think, in this sort of condensed schedule. It's going to be so weird, though, man. It's going to be so weird.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, they haven't even released the second half of the schedule yet, right? So we can't even, you know, project out past 50 games as to what the second half of the season is going to look like. And you even saw, you know, last night in the Lakers game, when the Lakers and the Clippers were playing a pretty close game, and then you notice, like, LeBron and AD aren't playing in the last 5 minutes of a close game. And
yeah,
I wonder if we're going to see more stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember, like, there were 3 minutes left and the Clippers were up by like 12 or something like that. It's, you know, it's going to be a low percentage comeback for the Lakers at the best of times. And then I'm like scanning the floor and I'm like, there's KCP, there's AD, there's, you know, this guy and this guy. And then they cut to LeBron on the bench and I was like, ah, yep, it's 2020.
Yeah. Right. Has the pandemic changed your work process? You're at a different outlet this year, but you did normally like attend games from time to time for the Pistons. How's the pandemic kind of affected you and how you've been able to accomplish things during the season?
Well, it has, I think, actually been pretty favorable. I'm not going to be doing games credentialed this season, most likely. It's actually, I don't want to say it's a good break. Like, I don't want to like ever seem too happy about like the way things that a pandemic have impacted my life. The fact that like I still have like, you know, full Zoom access for Pistons stuff. The guys who are like at games having to like zoom in from their seats in the media section have no more or less access than I do zooming from my own home. And like now that I'm also not just covering the Pistons, but I'm covering the whole league for Hoops Habit, I've also got like five other teams, I think, that I've got to like Zoom hookups with. So it's really kind of opened things up to me that in a kind of incredible way, you know, like I have been tuning into more Rockets Zoom calls, for example, than Pistons Zoom calls lately, simply because like I want to know what's going on there. Doing so doesn't really put me at a disadvantage because I can just like catch the recorded Zoom call later for the Pistons. So the fact that like distancing has made it so that basically everything media related is so decentralized now has been a pretty favorable development personally, because like I've been able to like do all the work I need to do from home, and I can accomplish more essentially in the same amount of time, simply because like I don't have to be at a place at a time for games, and I can do all the same work and more because I'm able to keep tabs on more teams and more events than I would have been otherwise if I was at games. So it's been really weird, and I don't think that I've quite optimized my experience yet, but it's been something that has been really I feel very fortunate that I've been able to sort of benefit from the strangest times in our lifetimes.
Yeah, I never thought about the potential for a leveling effect like with regards to access, but that makes a ton of sense. I guess it's because I didn't know that they had media guys zooming in from their spots in the arena. That seems horribly inefficient, but far be it from me to tell teams how they should run their health and safety during a global pandemic. I know very little about health and safety, right. So I don't feel comfortable dispensing advice. But that's an interesting effect. You notice that you can, or you're making time to learn more in-depthly, or go more in-depth about other teams in the league simply because you have the, you know, the access and the time to. That's something I wouldn't have considered, and that's interesting. I always like asking people like how their lives are different during the pandemic, because obviously everyone's life like is different, and I always get interesting answers, and you know, it's changed everything in very small ways for people.
Yeah, most definitely. It's such a like a quantum shift in the way everybody does things, and in some ways it's made getting, you know, getting work done a more efficient process. You know, whether it be working from home when it's something that that maybe you can do just as effectively at home, and maybe even more so, because I've been fortunate enough to have been able to work from home for most of my working life in various different pursuits that I've been a part of. And it seems as though, you know, at least for what I do and the way that I can do it best, it seems as though like these changes, if they end up being, you know, permanent down the road, like whether, you know, obviously like in-person reporting is never going to be replaced as long as it's a possibility.
Right.
But you know, if there is like a remote angle that can be included for some of those things, I see that as a very favorable development.
No, for sure. For sure. Good to go back to the Pistons, but not really back to the Pistons, to kind of indirectly get back to the Pistons. I don't want to rehash the whole offseason, but to tie in like one element, you wrote recently about Luke Kennard's new extension with the Clippers for Hoops Habit. Did that extension kind of change, or did it reinforce how you felt about the Kennard trade in the first place?
It changed it a bit, and it greatly reinforced all of my greatest fears. it seemed when the deal went down, it seemed as though it was like, all right, the Pistons got a bad prescription on or a bad diagnosis on what Luke's knee is going to look like down the road. So they decided that like they've got to make a move now, because his value can only go downhill from here. So they've got to dump him on like whoever is the first team that calls. So I was like, all right, if that's the case, then this deal makes sense. It doesn't make sense under any other situation. You know, if Luke is salvageable in any way, like if Luke can be an NBA player this season, this deal makes no sense. So, you know, RIP Luke, it's been great. So that was kind of the situation that I was operating under until news of the extension came in, which I think it caught everybody off guard. I don't think anybody saw it coming. I don't think anybody was even talking about the possibilities of an extension. And so just the fact that the Pistons salary dumped a guy, a 24-year-old guy, who was within weeks given a 4-year, $64 million extension, tells me that the Pistons didn't know why the Clippers wanted Luke in the first place, or didn't care. And either are possible and neither are good.
Nope. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, that, if they didn't know why the Clippers were so eager to take him off their hands,
that's bad.
That's not putting a whole lot of thought into the situation. If they didn't care why, then that's like dereliction of duty. And I think it's got to be one or the other. I don't really see any kind of workaround where it's not one of the two, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, I understand that. I get it. I think it definitely, from what they did with other moves this offseason, it definitely to me points more to didn't care, which is not great, but is in my mind at least, better than didn't know.
Yeah, because again, like, indifference and dereliction of duty, I think, are not great, but one is really, really bad, and the other one is just not, it is also bad, but not as bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of my take on it. And man, I haven't been able to quite bring myself to like tallying up what the departure of Luke, Christian, Bruce, and then like going all the way back to like Andre, Reggie Jackson, and Marquise Morris, who may or may not have been you know, gettable for some sort of like distant late second round pick or not, you know, who cares. But like, I have not brought myself to like tallying up the total games played, total games started in the last year or so for those guys, and like what return they got. I don't think I'm going to do that. That's for other people now. That's not for me to do. But it's not going to be a good result when you look at like the total value gained from like the hundreds of games started just last year combined for those guys.
Yeah, I think that's one thing we can quite. It's very early in the Troy Weaver era for Detroit, but one thing I think we can say with a lot of certainty is that they are not looking for like excess value on transactions. That's not something that is they are prioritizing, right? And that is classically what we have thought of as the way to we've thought of like, if you accrue enough small values, like that will add up to large value, and then that will like make the team better. You will you will see results once you have accrued a lot of small values. They seem to be thinking that like we will accrue a lot of value just by getting the guys that we know are good and seeing how they play and making them good. And then once they're good, they'll have value. I don't know if that's going to be a successful strategy, but
especially when you got to like mortgage things to get there, you know, like multiple stretches to get Plumlee, to say nothing of like trades for players that they were intending to stretch, but then realized after acquiring the player, they didn't have to stretch them after all. Like, I don't want to call it completely haphazard, but it does seem as though rather than like this complex network of moves that like before whatever day free agency began, it's all jumble right now, but like free agency day minus one, whatever day that was, you know, I don't think that Weaver and, you know, his chief strategist there, David Mintzberg, I don't think that they had like this network of moves like Charlie Day and that Always Sunny GIF. You know, they didn't have this like this highly detailed like point by point by point. This is going to happen, and then we can do this, and then we can do this, and then when all this is done, then we can pounce. No, I think they're like, all right, well, we got to get Mason Plumlee. How do we do that? All right, we trade for Dwayne Dedmon. It's like they've got like three or four bullet points they've got to hit. They've got to get these guys. They've got to do whatever it takes to get them. And like, you know, the process be damned. Now we've got Mason Plumlee. Heck yeah.
Yeah. You know,
it's more a matter of like planning by chaos, I think, more so than just having like a highly detailed, really, really structured plan, because there's no way they planned all this shit. And pardon me, I'm sorry, Blue Wire. All this stuff in advance.
No, it's very like results orientated planning, right? Like,
we
need Mason Plumlee. How do we make that happen?
Right. And that's the thing you do when you're like, you know, you're the Lakers and you're missing pieces, Anthony Davis. You know, it's like that's. When you don't care about the price anymore and you just got to get that guy, like it's the last guy that you get, you know, for to complete the puzzle. It's not the first puzzle, you know. You don't mash piece one and piece two together to start the puzzle. And that's kind of the way I see them like putting the pieces together for this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I found the Smith wave and stretch, like much more egregious than the Deadman wave and stretch, only because you could have cut Smith and just paid a salary for the year. There was no need to like stretch his waived salary. Like you could have eaten it. But I did think that it's hard to call like the stretch of Dwayne Dedmon like ingenious, but the acquiring of a contract with like a low number on the second guaranteed year in order to stretch it and extend it, kind of including that guaranteed year to lower the amount of money like per year that that you have in the dead cap. Like I thought that was like a nice bit of like angle shooting that we hadn't really seen. Taken advantage of by front offices. I mean, and again, they used that space to sign Mason Plumlee. So, you know, who knows? But right, I thought that was fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I was looking at these stretches and I was like, all right, there's got to be some sort of pattern that makes a lot of sense. You know, like especially like trading Tony Bradley for Zaire Smith and like stretching Zaire instead of stretching Bradley was like, it saves them like $100,000. over the course of like 3 years. But like as I was looking just like at the transaction list, I'm like, there's got to be like some sort of pattern that makes sense. And then I thought I saw something. What it was, I couldn't even tell you now, because like once I started like actually like I broke out the calculator app and I was like, no, this is garbage. There's no way this is the only way to do this. There's no way that you had to put five more years of dead money on this cap to make these things work. It's just, there had to be some other way. But I realized when I looked at that Bradley for Zaire move that Pop has a saying that maybe it's not a saying, maybe he just said it once, but I think he was asked some sort of nonsense question by a reporter and he called it superfluous nonsense. And that's exactly what that move was. It's just nonsense. It's there's no way to make that look genius. I tried. I put on Twitter. I was like, I figured it out. Nobody like keep your calculator apps closed. This is mine. Stay away. And then I got like halfway through and I was like, no, this is garbage. And I think you can even see in my piece where I was like, well, I've written this much already. I have to finish it. And then at the end, I was like, this isn't genius, guys.
I've come this far. I've come too far to stop.
Yeah. I realized that my process in this piece was the exact same process that they used in free agency. I was like, well, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? You got the piece out and you know what? They got Mason Plumlee. That's just sometimes what needs to happen.
We both got our wins.
Duncan, thank you so much for staying up late and podcasting with me. I really appreciate it. Let the people know where they can find you and the work that you're going to do, not just for the Pistons this season.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Duncan Smith MBA. I have also lately been doing rooms on Locker Room, and I'm not going to get into what that is exactly. Just download the app and figure it out. I'm Duncan Smith MBA there as well. And you can follow my work on the Pistons and the NBA at large at hoopshabit.com, where I'm the site expert. And today we had 15 pieces for 15 different teams come out. And boy, I'm tired. I'm not even going to punch in tomorrow until like noon.
That is a lot of content.
That's a lot of content. And I didn't write any of it either. I'm still spent.
You know, and as soon as Locker Room comes to Android, I will join you, but not a second before.
my understanding is that it's coming. I don't know when, but I hope it comes soon, because actually we've had some pretty good conversations lately. Keith Black at Charlotte. I'm not even sure exactly how you would pronounce that that name on Twitter. Charlotte AN at Charlotte AN. Has been
Charlottean.
Charlottean. Okay.
Yeah.
He's jumped on my last couple of rooms, and we've had some pretty interesting conversations. Ku Cahill has been on quite a bit. Him and Sham basically used my whole hour a couple of days ago to argue about. I don't even remember who it was. Svi. They argued about Svi for most of an hour, and I pretty much just muted my own mic and sat back and listened, and got made fun of for being a bad moderator. But hey, it's my room, so I don't care.
No, absolutely no. See, yeah. all this is doing is making me madder and madder that it's not on Android, and I can't come in there and yell about me. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah,
I guess I will have to restrict my lonely Svee takes to Twitter, where you can follow me at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. You can also listen to my other podcast, the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this podcast on. This has been Pistons versus Everybody, and we will talk to y'all next week. See you.